the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Retirement will be more difficult in the years ahead, and we're not just here to give you a bunch of bad news, most of which you probably know already, but to give you the proper framework for how to understand the investment environment that we think is likely to be with us for the next 10 years. Most importantly, we want to make sure that you're able to properly structure your investment portfolio in such a way where you can profit and lessen the damage that's going to occur as we face a increasingly difficult environment in the years ahead. So, Jim, with that said, if you wouldn't mind, let's start with what you're looking at in terms of stock bond portfolios for the next 10 years.
You know what investors tend to do, and we all do this as human beings, we tend to look at what has just transpired. So if you look at the last decade, the stock market was up 250%. But what is often forgotten, in the year 2000, the S&P hit a peak in March of 2000. Then it fell almost 55% over the next 2 years. Then we went from 2002 all the way up to 2007 and got back to where we were back in 2000. But then we went through the great financial crisis where the S&P lost 60% of its value. So for 13 years, Chris, if you were in a, an S&P index fund, you made zero. About the only return you got in the market was from whatever dividends that you got. And that is what I think we're heading into, pretty much similar to what we saw between 1966 and 1982. What characterized that period of time? High inflation rates, oil prices broke from $250 a barrel, went all the way up to $40. Gold went from $35 to $800. Silver from 50 cents to all the way $50. And interest rates rose. I don't think you're going to see the same kind of rise in interest rates because the Fed is going to be in there repressing bond yields. But what I think you're more likely to do is see what we saw between 66 and 82, where you'd have a couple years of a bull market that would be followed by higher inflation and a bear market. And we would go back and forth, multiple bull markets, multiple bear markets. Probably the worst one was 1973 to 1974. And I think that's what you're more likely to see going forward. The other thing that's going to distinguish this and make this different than most other decades that you've experienced is right now inflation is running at a high percent and it'll probably remain high in the single digits and at periods of time double digits throughout this decade. And a lot of that is being driven, as we discussed on last week's show, by modern monetary theory, which drives government policy. And both policies both parties are adhering to this policy. And just like World War II, where we came out with a debt-to-GDP ratio closer to 300%, which is where we're heading towards now, what happened in order to finance those deficits and keep the economy going, the Fed repressed interest rates on bonds. Chris, when if you were in the markets in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, you actually got a higher yield from stocks, which is very reflective of what this investment environment looks like today. The yield on stocks is higher than the yield on bonds. Although the bond market is backed up recently, I don't think it's going to stay there. So financial repression, and I also think, as you've seen, this is a good example this year. Just take a look at the stock market back and forth since January. It's a lot more volatile. And as I mentioned, and Frank Barbera and I talked about this on the weekend show, we're going to be going through these rotating bull and bear markets where the cycle on the upside is probably going to be no more than 1 or 2 years, and likewise on the downside.
So, Jim, if I got you correctly, you're looking at this period that we're moving into and that we've already begun, probably as of 2020. We're looking at higher inflation. We're looking at higher volatility. As you mentioned, there's going to be quicker rotations within this period. So a higher emphasis on active management versus just holding, a passive index fund, which worked very well, for the past 10 years or so. And it sounds like the period that you're looking at, that all of our listeners can kind of think of to wrap their head around, about how this is going to look is that period from 1966 to 1982, if I got that correct.
Yeah, and I think more importantly, Chris, is there's been a philosophy in the financial industry, which was the 60-40 split, 60% in equities, 40% in bonds. And it worked very well for almost 50, 60 years, even during the financial crisis, where the stock market lost 60%. If you were in the bond market, you made 30 to 40%. So the gains in bonds help to mitigate the losses in stocks, but it's not working. That works in a low inflationary environment. It does not work in an inflationary environment. And the best example I can give you is this year. If you're in bonds, you probably lost close to 20%. If you look at TLT, it's down 20% for the year. You have bond funds like LQD that's down close to 8%. You have junk bonds that are down 7 or 8%, while the stock market itself is down 8%. So if you were in stocks and bonds this year, like, I don't know, passive index funds, an S&P index fund, or even a bond index fund like the Barclays fund, you've lost money. And that's pretty much the way it was during the 70s. I can remember, Chris, when I first got in the business, I was apprenticing with a financial planner at that time. This was towards the end of the 70s. And I remember a gentleman came into the office. He had a $750,000 bond portfolio. Back then, people were more apt to buy individual stocks and bonds. Mutual funds and ETFs weren't as prolific as they are now. And that $750,000 bond portfolio was worth $400,000. We used to call bonds certificates of confiscation. And that's pretty much what you're going to be looking at in this decade. So this whole idea of pie chart, passive index investing is not working, and it's not working now, and it's not going to be working in this decade. The only time that kind of strategy works is in a disinflationary, low inflation environment, which is what we've been in since 1980. So take a look at the last 40 years. That was what worked. It's not going to work in the next decade. You're also going to be facing higher taxes. And we have to take a look at, for example, the president's plan Build Back Better had all kinds of tax increases, estate planning tax increases, income tax increases, the phasing out of certain tax strategies. Thank goodness that didn't get passed. But nonetheless, you have to remember the Trump tax bill, which everybody's benefiting from now, that sunsets in 2025. Since they use the budget reconciliation basis to pass the tax law, it's not permanent. So it expires at the end of 2025. When that happens, all the tax rates, because if you look at the old Obama tax rates, they were higher tax rates set at lower levels of income. That comes back into play in 2026, where the tax rate will jump from where it is now at 35 to 39.6. Capital gains will be higher. Those brackets will get ratcheted up, and even the lower brackets. The other factor that's going to come in right now, you can pass roughly about $11,060,000 estate tax free. So a husband and wife using a trust can double that exemption. So Chris, basically you can pass almost close to $24 million tax free. That's going to change in 2026. It'll go back to the Obama exemption of $3.6 million indexed by inflation, which should put it somewhere around $5.5 million. So if your estate has been going up, let's say you own real estate, your home has gone up, you could be looking at estate taxes down the road. The other thing that we've seen over the years, beginning with Reagan, beginning with Clinton, and also beginning with Obama, is the phasing out, and by the way, with Trump, is the phasing out of itemized deductions. We all know all about the SALT deduction, where they limited the property tax deduction to only $10,000. They reduced the mortgage deduction on a mortgage. It used to be $1 million plus $100,000 for, let's say, a equity loan. Now that's been reduced to $750,000. And then they also got rid of the deductibility of estate taxes. They got rid of the deductibility of miscellaneous taxes. It's also harder to get deductions for medical expenses, which is really important for seniors. With a serious illness, you can rack up a lot of medical expenses, but you have to exceed a certain percentage of your gross income in order to get a deduction. So they're phasing out a lot of these deductions, and also they're phasing out or trying to phase out tax strategies such as the backdoor Roth. One of the things that we do with some of our upper income clients is we have them use a backdoor Roth where they're not limited on income or a $7,000 contribution. They can put up to $26,000, $27,000, $28,000 or more into a Roth and build up a tax-free portfolio. The other thing that happened that came in with the Trump tax bill is they changed the inflation rate on which they use to index tax brackets. Because the worst thing you want to do, you get a raise, but that raise puts you in a higher tax bracket with inflation creep. Well, what they did is they adjusted the inflation rate, which they used to basically increase your Social Security benefits and also increase the tax bracket so you don't get hit by inflation. So as your income goes up with pay increases, you're going to be pushed into a higher tax bracket. And the real key for a lot of married couples is what happens between the 24% bracket and the 28% bracket. There's a big jump. For example, if you're married between $83,551 and $178,000, you're in a 22% bracket. After $178,000, it jumps to a 24% bracket, which goes all the way up to $340,000. And then after that, it jumps all the way up to 32%. The bracket jumps by 8%. And we'll talk about in a case study why that's really key. Single, once you hit $170,000, you jump into that 32% bracket. So they're limiting the inflationary benefits of indexing the brackets, as well as, remember, there's six Medicare brackets depending on your income. You can pay all the way up to over $500 a month for Medicare. The other thing we're starting to see is government fees going up on just about everything. I don't care if it's gasoline, your utility fees, your phone, your cell phone fees, and also rising property taxes. And then for many seniors, we're seeing rising medical costs, whether it's Medicare premiums, or just the fact that as you get older and your health deteriorates, you end up paying more for medical, and a lot of that's going to be non-deductible.
Now, if some of you are listening and thinking this is a lot of information to take in, we are going to do a case study a little bit later on where we're going to take some of this information and apply it to some specific clients or hypothetical cases that we've constructed to see how this all comes together. But Jim, before you do that, give us some of the key points, given what we've discussed so far in terms of how to plan differently for surviving this decade.
Well, right at the top of the list, Chris, is the number one topic in the country right now is inflation. I don't care if you're looking at gasoline, your utilities, or food. I mean, it's one of my favorite restaurants. It's Pollo Loco. Chris, there's been almost a inflation increase once a month over the last 2 months. So they've raised prices twice in just 2 months. So planning for inflation throughout this decade, that was something you weren't really dealing with. Maybe over a longer period, over 10 years, certainly inflation at 2 to 3% would start to impact your budget, but now it's going to impact it almost annually. The other thing that you're going to have to get used to is low bond market returns and negative returns, especially if you're in bond ETFs or bond mutual funds. You really need to think back to what it was like in the 1970s. Back then, Chris, mutual funds weren't as prolific, so at least people were doing individual bonds. If you kept the bond long enough, let's say you had a 10-year treasury or 10-year corporate bond or municipal bond, at least at the end of the 10 years, you got your money back. But that's not how investors invest today. They mainly go in bond ETFs and bond funds where there is no guarantee on what your income is going to be or what your principal is going to be. There is no maturity date. And the other factor is you're going to have to look at multiple bull and bear markets. Stocks aren't going to go up every single year like they did in the last decade. You're going to have multiple years where they'll go up, may be more volatile, and you're going to have multiple years where stocks go down. Think of 2000, 2002, or think of 2007 to 2009, where the market went down every single year for 2 years. You're going to see more of that, but it's not going to be like, well, we saw it once, and then we had 10 good years, and then we saw it again, and we saw another 10 years. It's not going to be like that. It's probably going to be every other year you're going to be going through a bull and bear market. Other factors you're going to have to look at is tax minimization strategies, especially for income taxes and estates. And we're really moving into what we call an active versus passive investing. Passive investing works in a low inflation environment. It does not work in a high inflationary environment. Just think back to the 00 decade. As we began the new century, two major bear markets of 55 and 60% in a 10-year period wiped out the returns, so you got zero in stocks. But this time, it's not just going to be stocks, you're going to lose money in bonds.
Let's move on to today's case study with Ted and Sally. And we do want to mention that we at Financial Sense Wealth Management work mainly with high net worth clients. And so here's where we put into practice a lot of what we discussed today with a hypothetical scenario based on the services that we provide here at our firm. So Jim, if you would mind, kick it off when we look at Ted and Sally. What did their plan look like and how did you help them navigate through retirement?
Well, if we take a look at this, Ted was a retired attorney. Sally was a paralegal. They met, got married, and saved, and they did pretty well. So when they came to us, they had about $3 million in investment assets, of which $2.5 million was in IRAs rolled over from their employment. Their house was free and clear, paid for in Wisconsin. So, they didn't have any major housing expenses because they lived in a free and clear home, lived in a small town, kind of wanted to stay there. But if anybody's been in Wisconsin, you know what the winters are like. So they wanted to think about a couple things. One, getting out of Wisconsin during the winter months. So they wanted to go down to Florida. They have friends that go down there during the winter months, which a lot of people on the Midwest and East Coast do, because it's actually, you got a nice balmy 75, 80 degrees in Florida during that time. So their budget roughly was about $8,000 a month plus whatever vacation travel to Florida. That would be rentals down there. They said we're going between $5,000 and $6,000. So here's what we did. So over the next 5 years, we're going to do Roth conversions of $150,000 a year. And the reason we're going to do that is the bulk of their assets are roughly about $2.5 million are in their IRAs. And as they get older, they're going to be caught up in a tax trap, which happens to a lot of people with large IRA rollovers from work, because every year that you get older, you have to start taking out more money out of your IRA. So you might start out taking, let's say, 4% at age 72, because that's been raised. And by the way, we'll do a show on this. There's a law right now working through Congress. They want to push the RMD age to 73 and then eventually bump it up to 75 after the year 2030. So they're moving in that direction. And then also they want to cut back on the penalties for under withdrawals. Because right now, if you have a withdrawal, let's say you're supposed to take out $10,000 out of your IRA to meet your RMD, and you only take $5,000, there's a 50% tax penalty on the under withdrawal payment. They want to reduce that eventually to 10%. So that's good news there. So what we did is we wanted to keep them in a 24% tax bracket. And the idea, Chris, was to do the Roth conversions of $150,000 a year at the end of 5 years. They will be at that age where they have to start begin taking mandatory distributions out of IRA at age 72 or possibly 73 if this new tax law passes. But the neat thing about this is right now, if I was to go in the muni bond market, I would be lucky if I could get 2% tax-free. With a Roth conversion, the money that goes into a Roth, if held there 5 years, comes out tax-free. So we're putting individual stocks that are high dividend paying stocks, everything from the oil companies where we were getting 5 to 7% to some of the drug companies where we were getting over 4, utilities we were getting over 4, some of the tech stocks 5. So imagine taking out a 5% tax-free income. And more importantly, that even helps their kids when they inherit the IRAs, because under the new laws, your kids have to take out their portion of the IRA over a 10-year period. You still have to take it out of a Roth. The difference is it'll be tax-free. So we're converting $750,000, $150,000 a year to keep them in that 24% bracket, because we didn't want to jump up to the 32% bracket. They will begin their RMDs at age 72 or 73. And looking into Florida, it's going to cost them roughly about $5,000 to $6,000. They found a place for roughly about $5,500. You multiply that times 3 months. So let's just round it off and say $18,000 added to the budget for winters in Florida, which we think we could do. And then we didn't want to put everything in the stock market. Most of it went into my income fund, which is made up of high dividend aristocrats. It's made up of preferred convertibles, short-term bonds, and a hedge in the commodity market. And that yield is somewhere between 3.5% to 4%, although I'm looking at some stocks that'll raise the yield up to 4. So on 4%, we're going to be getting, you know, well over $100,000 a year in income. And the other thing is, with their personal investments, we wanted to go into dividend stocks, because the tax on dividends is far lower on capital gains than it is. For example, if you take a look at dividends right now, a married couple can make up to $83,350 and pay zero tax on dividends or capital gains, and a 15% tax rate from $83,000 to $517. One caveat: if you make over $250,000, if you're married, you add the Obama tax at 3.8%. So we would take their personal portfolio, and we wanted to put that into dividends, because they would pay virtually almost zero tax, or a 15% tax. The other factor is, even though there's no estate taxes on where they are now, given what we've done with appreciation with the income fund, I mean, this year we're up close to 8%. We wanted to put in what we call a disclaimer trust. And what a disclaimer trust allows a couple to do, if one spouse passes away and your assets are below the exemption, you just leave it in one trust. It passes to the survivor. However, if your estate gets large enough where you could be subject to estate taxes beginning in 2026 when they lower the exemption, what this allows a married couple to do is split the trust in two parts and double their exemption to save on estate taxes. Another factor, we actually began taking distributions from their IRA to live on, because the other strategy we wanted to do is we wanted Ted to postpone taking his Social Security to age 70, where it would grow by almost 32%. Now, Sally began taking her Social Security, so they're living on that. And then the plan is, at age 70, she can switch over to half of Ted's. So in this case, we're using dividend strategies. We're using a Roth conversion to get tax-free income. We're using dividend aristocrats to provide for inflation with an inflation hedge. And that's pretty much the plan. And it's something that we're doing a lot more of. The other strategy is, if they like Florida well enough, like I said, they spent 3 months there this winter, and they just got back, and then they're taking a look at going back there next year. If they like it, they may end up moving there, which would save them further money, because there is no income tax in the state of Florida. A lot of their friends have moved down there for retirement. They like the warmer weather, and they like not paying taxes. So that's another strategy I think you're going to see a lot more of, Chris, is where people actually work longer or work part-time to supplement their income, or move to low-tax jurisdictions where the cost of living is lower.
So as we discussed today, retirement is going to be more difficult, we believe, in the years ahead. but there are a number of things and strategies that you can do in order to mitigate the effects. The time period that we're looking at that we think is going to most closely approximate the period we'll see over the next decade is around that 1966 to 1982 period. So if you'd like to reach out to us to get in touch with Financial Sense Wealth Management to speak with any of our certified financial planners or our wealth advisors about how we can assist you, you can give us a call at 888-486-3939, or you can also go to our website, financialsense.com, and hit where it says contact us.
You know, it's amazing, Chris, as we close, I began my career in 1980, and the two issues that we were all dealing with were taxes and inflation. The tax rates back then were 70%, including on estates. The exemption on the estate was only $175,000. They taxed the estate on the death of the first spouse. And so we were dealing with inflation rates of 15%, 15.5% interest rates. And here we are, 40 years later, dealing with the same thing coming back full circle. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Sheridan and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.